Hey, I'm Francis Lam, and this is Splendid Table Selects, our mini podcast about the stuff that makes us better cooks and eaters. Here is one of the most delicious things you can do. Cook a bunch of soybeans, mash them with salt and yeast, let it hang out till it rots. Congratulations, you just made miso, and it's for way more than just soup. Kristen Shockey, who refers to herself as a fermentista, began fermenting foods over 20 years ago, and now teaches the art of fermentation around the world and at her homestead in Oregon. She's co-authored a number of books on the subject, and our managing producer, Sally Swift, recently talked with her all about miso. Have a listen.
So let's talk miso, and let's just start right at the top and tell us what it is and how it's made.
So yeah, miso is ancient. It is a bean paste, fermented bean paste, and it comes via China 2,500 years ago. I call it a top shelf ferment because it's fermented with Aspergillus oryzae, which is koji, is the first step. And you're growing a fungus on usually a grain every once in a while, also on the beans, but traditionally on rice or barley. And that fungus starts to lay down enzymes, and those enzymes are the superpower. They are, you can kind of think of them as little scissors or something, just snipping away at the larger molecules. So they're making your fats into fatty acids, they're making your protein into amino acids, and they're taking the starch that the microbes couldn't get up at naturally, and making it into simple sugar, which then it's available for lactobacillus and yeast to start moving in and fermenting
and the magic
transforming
happens.
Yeah, and so what we know of as miso particularly today is Japan's variation on this process.
I was surprised to hear that it's related to hoisin sauce.
Yeah, way back, hoisin was one of the first foods produced using something called shi, which is primarily soy, the soybean fermented. Mm-hmm. But hoisin was originally fermented, and it often had things like eggplant or pumpkins and different vegetables in it as well. So it was probably a very different product than what we see in the supermarket now.
So interesting. Okay, so let's get back to miso. So when we buy it in the store, I mean, we can obviously make it, and it's fairly simple to make.
Yeah, correct. It's super simple. In fact, you can just buy the koji pre-made and cook up a pot of beans. They can be soybeans or your favorite heirloom bean or just simple pinto beans. And you mix it with salt and that koji, and you smush it down into a jar and let the magic happen. It happens without you.
Wow.
The microbes are on it.
That is pretty simple. It's a dump and mix, essentially.
Pretty much. And wait, and that's the hard part.
I would love for you to give us a little bit of a primer. Miso comes in all different colors. There's red, there's yellow, there's white. You write that the white is the gateway miso. Is that the place we should be starting?
You know, white is sweet, and Americans seem to love sweet, so it is a good gateway for that. So let's talk about that spectrum of colors, right? There's, like you said, there's white, and then there's the really dark, dark misos. On the other end is like a hacho miso, and it's a mahogany color. And how those are made is the white miso is more of this koji rice and less soybean and less salt and less thyme. So it's still sweeter. All those sugars haven't been fermented away. On the other end of the spectrum, you have less koji, more salt, and more thyme. And these misos, they get darker with thyme, and it's actually the Maillard reaction. So the same thing that kind of happens when you're browning onions is also browning that miso through thyme.
Oh, what a great analogy that is. That makes sense. I definitely buy my miso. I don't make my miso, and it stays in the back of my refrigerator for a really long time. Is there too much thyme? Is it possible to have your miso go bad?
Not at all. I mean, what you're doing is you're just adding to your aging process.
It's aging.
It's aging. You know, I talked to a miso maker an American miso maker, South River Miso, and they're in Massachusetts, and he's been making miso for over 30 years. And he said he has a miso museum, and he's got one bit left of a 30-year-old white miso. And, you know, you read everywhere, don't save white miso. My white miso is, you know, supposed to be eaten young. Well, it is, but it doesn't go bad. And he said it's actually like a bouillon cube now.
Oh, that is so interesting. So when you are looking at your spectrum of miso and from the lighter to the darker, what should you be thinking about when you make that choice as to which one you go for? I mean, obviously the white is sweeter, but then the yellow and the various, there's kind of a red color one. Do they do that with adzuki beans? I mean, you know, what are we thinking about when we're looking at the color spectrum? How do we choose?
Yeah. So just on the red, you asked if there's adzuki beans. No, there's still soybeans and rice. And it's a different member, if you will, of that Aspergillus oryzae, that Koji family.
And,
and so it just changes that color and gives that sort of classic flavor. But to answer your other question, what I look at when I'm trying to think of how I want to use something is, what am I looking for in the dish? So like a yellow miso or chickpea miso and even a red miso, those are kind of middle of the road. They're going to give you really nice flavors, but they're not going to be, you know, crazy strong. So I use those for marinating things. Like you can marinate veggies in them and kind of pickle your veggies. So remember I talked about...
Wait a minute. Yeah, explain that. What do you mean you can pickle in miso? I've never heard this.
So remember I talked about enzymes? Well, that's the beauty of miso, especially if you're getting the unpasteurized miso. You're getting the power of those enzymes. They're still in there waiting to do something. And you can take veggies or you can take tofu and you can wrap them in miso. So with veggies, I just put them down in a little container, you know, put my slices of veggies in and then cover it up slightly. So in 3 or 4 hours, you're going to have this like salty, rich flavored cucumber or daikon or whatever you're going to use. And you suddenly have this wonderful thing to add to your your cheese board or whatever. Or with the
tofu.
You're
kidding me. Wait a minute. And no. Can I just ask one more question? So then do you scrape off that miso? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
really
absolutely.
The answer here. So, yeah. So you've layered this vegetable in between, like, you know, I think of Play-Doh almost with miso. And then you pull the vegetable out that's now pickled. And then do you get to reuse that miso?
Right. Yeah. You're just going to take your fingers and scrape most of it back into that little container. You can either serve the veggie with the chunks on there or just rinse it off completely. And then, you can use that, you know, 3 or 4 times. As those flavors are infusing your vegetables, what happens is it kind of gets a little weaker, you know, as the salt is being moved into the veggies. So when we're done with, let's say, a miso pickling run, we will use that either for soup or I'll use it to marinate meat or something that I'm not going to scrape it off and reuse it again. And then put that on the barbecue. And again, you're just harvesting those enzymes and they're breaking down and adding flavor and texture to your food.
Wow, that is so interesting. So what else would you do with this kind of mid-range miso? Soup is obviously the place that most people
encounter. I know, but we want to go beyond the broth, right?
Yes, beyond. Yeah, exactly.
So I think of it sort of as a secret sauce. I mean, it can add this little pow to anything that you would normally make. Let's say you're, you know, you like refried beans and you like making burritos. You can throw a little miso in there. You can throw a chickpea miso in a hummus dip. And you get kind of chickpea squared, you know, but you get this interesting flavor. White miso I use for salad dressings a lot. I'll use a chickpea miso for that. The really dark miso I actually have put into dulce de leche, and you get this real nice salty umami.
So a sweet, you would take the dark miso and mix it with a sweet. I guess it's like cocoa, right? Those chocolate notes to it?
You get a little of that. To me, it reminds me of the caramel, like a salted caramel something rich and just smooth.
So you make a dulce de leche syrup, essentially, correct?
Yeah. And, you know, if you really aren't the type of person that wants to make all these things at home, you can buy the dulce de leche and you can buy the miso and then just
and
put them together.
I love that. I think that's a great idea. Kristen, it was so great to talk to you. Thanks.
Oh, you're so welcome.
That was Fermentista Kristen Shockey. She and her husband, Christopher Shockey, have written a bunch of books on fermentation. Their latest is Miso, Tempeh, Natto, and Other Tasty Ferments. If you're feeling inspired to make your own miso, Kristen shared her step-by-step guide with us, so head to our website, splendidtable.org. And that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening, and I am Francis Lamb.